Welcome to Life Gloss, a beauty podcast for sassy and seasoned women who have lived life and have a drawer full of lip gloss to prove it. We're your hosts, Susan Gerdeman
and Hillary Clark Mina. Join us each Thursday as we discuss life and how it relates to the world of beauty inside and out. All right, Life Gloss family, I am so excited to bring together two of my favorite women. Susan, of course, you all know and love. You hear us together all the time. But this is another long time love affair that I've had with Leah. Aww. And Leah has blazed a trail across multiple continents. She has such an incredible pedigree, and now she's doing something all on her own. So welcome, Leah Hunsness from Maxine's Revenge. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm been looking forward to this for the last couple of weeks. So thank you so much.
Well, I think what you're doing, Leah, is not only so needed and so cool, but I have so many questions for you. And I know Hillary does too. I just want to jump in really fast, if that's okay, and ask you. I mean, you have such a background, and I know Hillary and I are going to get into your background and, you know, where you started and everything all about you. But I mean, tell us, why a concealer, you know, of all the products you could launch with? And we're talking about Maxine's Revenge, your brand, but why a concealer? I love it, and I'm so interested.
Oh gosh. Well, I think there's several reasons. I think I will just give a couple. The truth is that concealers tend to be just so easy to use for so many people, because there's a lot of people who give up on foundation at a certain point, and I didn't want to leave them out. Because that's actually, you know, a lot of who I'm focusing on is, you know, people for whom they feel makeup has failed them at a certain point once their skin has changed. Now, if you're a makeup junkie like you guys are, you always know how to work around formulas, but there's a lot of people that don't. Yeah. So I find concealers more forgiving, actually. And I like the fact that you can keep them in your bag with you. You can just use them where you need to. It's more affordable. Also, concealers tend to have a more, because they're smaller fills, they're a better price point than a bottle of, you know, foundation at, you know, starting at 45 these days, it seems like. And yeah. So the fact that we have so many different shades on our face, we don't have one color. We've learned over the years to use more than one shade. And again, that makes it more affordable too. Not everyone's going to. Some people are still old school. They just want to use concealer to brighten under their eyes. That's the way they learned it, and that's all they want. Right. But there's a lot of other women who know about bronzing, I'll say. So they don't quite go the route of contouring, which is a lot more artistry, but they understand how to use a bronzer in certain places that would give them a bit more depth. So maybe they'll get one of those, and then they'll get, you know, their skin tone concealer, and then they're done. And then others will add on a highlighter for the extra. So in summary, price point and just adaptability of a concealer, more so than, let's say, a foundation.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something I noticed that in reading up on Maxine's Revenge, and I went on the website and really took a deep dive at what you're doing and what really sets it apart. And I love how, you know, you really have that one area that talks about the pricing and the transparency. Who does that? I absolutely love that. I think that was so powerful. You know?
Thank you so much for looking at that, because it's not something that the consumer is yet aware of.
Right.
And I want that to be something that she does learn, because the pricing is a little bit wacky in concealer. You know, as you guys have seen, foundations, they're more or less, they're all 30 ml or 1 ounce. I mean, 99%. That's not the same in concealer. So you can have your Kosas at 5 ml, and then you have your Dior at 11 ml. And so it's not as regulated from the quantity, you know, the fill is what we call it, for those of you that are listening that don't understand that term. It's just how much product is inside the tube. And so what happens with that is if you only look at the price, this is 32 or 30, or this is 42, you're only comparing those absolute numbers instead of realizing what's really a good deal is the Dior. Because when you see how many milliliters you're getting, it turns out to be $3.64 a milliliter. Meanwhile, something like Kosas, which is $30 for 5 ml, that's $6 an ml. So we walk around thinking Kosas is such a good deal, not realizing, you know, you're going to have to buy two or three of them just to keep up with Dior. And also, I think people don't realize that how far milliliters go. So it's hard for them to understand, well, I don't really even know the difference between 11 ml and 5 ml. So that's another piece I have to educate on. I tend to use lip gloss tubes as an example, because most of us have had lip gloss tubes since we were in high school, and those tend to be about 5 ml, you know, so I can let them know, you know, how long that lasts is about 5 or 6 ml. It's not entirely clicking, I think, for a lot of people, and that's okay. Yeah. It's just for those that are wanting to make sure that they're comparing apples to apples. I'm just fully open kimono about where I am on the price, you know, map.
Right. Well, and I also love that you tell on your unit carton, you tell them what the percentage is of skincare, of coverage, like you really break down, because they're getting a lot of skincare in this too. Hydration.
Yeah. So I'm glad you noticed that. I'm not surprised that you guys are picking up, because you're from the industry. So for somebody outside, they don't realize how game-changing this is, not to toot my own horn at all, but you guys are picking up on things that it's just not done in the beauty industry. You don't give percentages for your formula. You will list, I have vitamin E, I have squalene, I have vitamin C, but you won't mention that you have the most minute levels that have absolutely no clinical bearing on your skin. You're almost like taking a vial of vitamin C and passing it by the vat that's making your formula, and like, it counts, I have it in there, so I'm going to talk about it, instead of just being more upfront to say how much you are using, so people can get a better, more authentic gauge of what it is. So yeah, I did use, well, first of all, my goal was great makeup. I was not trying to be a merged skincare makeup company. I'm personally not interested in that for me personally. I want a sunscreen to be a sunscreen. I want makeup to be makeup, and I want skincare to be skincare. However, I happen to like the way glycerin feels on the skin, and I wanted something that works well with my coated pigments, something that plays really well with our skin, our you know, textured skin. And so it turns out that these hydrating and, you know, smoothing skincare ingredients are just a great base for the pigments. So that's how.
That's one thing that I would love our listeners to know about Leah, is that Leah not only has a background in product development and brand development, she has a rich background in marketing. So Leah knows about how beauty brands market, how sometimes they can market and be very transparent, very truthful, or it can be a lot of fluff, a lot of smoke and mirrors, which we talk about here. So she knows all the tricks, all the bells and whistles, all the angels' tears, all the unicorn drops, and she's chosen to really blow past that and talk to the consumer and create a product that's really consumer facing.
Yeah, that's a great observation. I didn't think about it in that term, but you're right. I wanted to be as close to the consumer as possible. And I just didn't want as many jazz hands as, wait, you know, I'd been paid like you in the past. We've been paid for a lot of jazz hands, smoke and mirrors. And it's also part of even my packaging design. I just wanted to keep it simple. I'm not spending a lot of money on components, not right now anyway. And I'm just keeping it kind of black and white and simple. I'm putting all my money in the formula. And this is one of those rare cases where the formula is more expensive than the packaging, which I know you guys know. It's normally
so
not
rare.
Normally, the rare. Packaging, right. That's way more expensive. Yeah. And also, you know, I'm not, I don't want to sound super altruistic. I'm also just, you know, I'm a scrappy startup business. And if I had to bet on something, I'm going to bet on the formula because I believe in our consumer. She has tried everything. By the time she's 40, 45, 50, 55, she has already been overpromised and underdelivered thousands of times in the purchase landscape, right? And so I just know she knows. She might not be a junkie like you guys that can really tell the difference in formulas, but she might not have the language for it, but she knows right. what works on her skin or not. So I didn't have the luxury of expensive, beautiful packaging and a big marketing campaign and a fantastic formula. That's the truth. So I had to bet where I thought it mattered the most. And I figured, look, I have enough runway. I'm, you know, self-funded retirement dollars. It's not like I have a windfall. I'm not sitting on a pile of cash at all, but I just decided that's where I'm going to bet is on the formula. And I will just do one person at a time. I will answer all the questions myself. I'll do my own customer service. I will just dig in. And if I have to work 12-hour days for 12 months in a row, I'll do it. And then I'll go to the next step. But I didn't want to come in like we've been paid to do, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we came in, our experience is market first and then deal with, you know, product, real product innovation, kind of secondary, but it's more about the name of the product and all the jazz hands that we've come from.
And, you know, I think that's credible, obviously. And I absolutely love where you're coming from with this brand because there's an intellect behind what you're saying. I think that you are saying, you know what, as women that are 40 plus, we don't need to be just influenced by what's hot, what's new, who's married to what celebrity, and look at their lip gloss. And as you're putting it, the jazz hands. And you're really saying, I believe in the intellect of the consumer who's going to drive to my brand, who's going to understand my transparency, and who's going to want products that work. Yeah. And they want to know, because as we get older, we're smarter, we're wiser, we're brighter, and we can spend our money where we want to. And I think, you know, Hillary and I talk about this a lot, like who are the women that are 40 plus that are out there now? We've seen it all. We've done it all. We've been there. You know, we read the book and we wrote the book. And now we want to know, is this a pretty product? Or is this product actually going to give us results and work for us? So your thought process and your respect to your consumer is outstanding.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for seeing that. That I'm going to like feast on that for weeks because that matters a lot to me. It's all I have. It's really all I've got. I don't have much more than the relationship with the, you know, my consumers. And like I said, When I made my lab crazy, I mean, we were respectful, of course, but I mean, really like nearly 30 submissions. And it's because, as you gals know, in the lab, first of all, in the lab and in product development teams, it's, you know, maybe 35 years old. The lab can have older R&D for sure, but sort of like brand facing, they're going to be a bit younger, and their arms when they're doing swatching are younger, their face is younger, the product development is younger. So the baseline formulas, you know, they always start with a baseline that they present to the brand to say, this matches your brief. What do you think? And then the brand generally tweaks it 8 ways from Sunday or not, or they'll just buy it from the lab. But from all of us, I know from our background, we all tweak it 8 ways from Sunday. They're not used to a 54-year-old, I'm now 55, but 50-year-old woman tweaking 8 ways from Sunday because they're not familiar with what good is for textured skin, textured thin skin. So, you know, that was my North Star, is really just don't get intimidated by the fact that you're exhausting your lab and taking up so much R&D time, because this is what trailblazing feels like. It's not fun. It feels awkward that you're pushing people out of their comfort zone. But I got them to a point where Madame Tout Le Monde, which sort of means Mrs. Everybody in French, she can tell. She might not know the words that the beauty editors know, but she can tell it looks good on her skin. And that is what I want. I wanted that endorsement. We didn't do any PR. So it wasn't like, first, let's go to the beauty influencers. Not that I don't love and want to support them, because I do. I want them to make money off me. I know what they're doing. It's hard. But I needed Mrs. Everybody. I needed that for me personally. I needed to know that I hit something out of the park for her.
Yeah, you have. And it's interesting. Tell us a little bit about some of the ingredients. I know you mentioned coated pigments. Talk to us a little bit about about the magic inside. So for our listeners and their audience, what can they expect it to look like and feel like, and when they can get their hands on it? Because I know you sold out and we're getting more in.
Yes.
But what their experience will be like with it.
Yeah, sure. I wanted it to be like a really great pair of tights. Mm-hmm. You know, very thin. Very, very, very thin, but full coverage. Those were the two mashups I wanted. So it's going to feel very liquidy, much more liquidy than you're used to with the concealer. So if you took out the wiper, which is the bit that kind of wipes off what's excess, if you took off the wiper and turned it upside down, it would pour out. Like water almost.
It feels like it has a serum texture. Yeah. You can see how light that is.
Yeah, it's definitely a serum, had a baby with a full coverage concealer.
But it's full body.
Yeah, it is. So it basically just kind of goes, there's a smoothing element to it. It just, it glides on the skin, I would say. If you put like one dollop of your other concealer on one cheek and French face on the other, it's going to be a lot more slip with French face. And it's just very thin. So in terms of the breakdown, it's 69% hydrating skincare, not just skincare. I didn't want to just be vague, but it's like hydrating skincare. And then there's 24% pigments. And then 7% blurring and functional ingredients, which you need just to have a formula clean and safe. So in the 69% skincare, I wanted to have the three main categories of ingredients that make up a good moisturizer, because then it'll just work with the pigments, right? So what is that? That's humectants. I liked glycerin and jojoba esters. So I just think those happen to work better for older skin. And I wanted the emollients. I wanted a smoothing emollient, squalane, which also has that double duty, as it's a bit occlusive. So it'll hold in some of that moisture, but it's smoothing over those rough little cells, those rough little skin cells. And then lastly, I wanted some occlusives to hold in the moisture, which I use fatty acids, linoleic and oleic acid. So I wanted to hit those three categories that you should look for in a basic moisturizer anyway, your humectants, your emollients, your occlusives, minimally. And that's what I worked on with the lab.
That's great. And it floats. It covers and it floats, but it doesn't coat and just sit.
No, it's not a mask. It's stretchy, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's with your skin and it moves with you. And yeah, it feels like you're not wearing anything.
It's a really unique texture. So I encourage everybody to go to Maxine's Revenge, check it out, feel it.
Thank you.
And it's definitely at a price point that is accessible, and you're really getting your bang for your buck. I mean, as all of our audience knows, you know, Susan and I don't talk about things that we haven't, you know, fully vetted and that we fully love. So it's really exciting. And Leah, tell everyone a little bit about your background. We've teased into it a little bit, but like, you know, for the people there that are like, why should we believe her? What does she know? Who is she? What does she even know?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your broad background.
Yeah, that's fair. So I started in the beauty business in 98 with you at Sephora.com. So I was the director of marketing for Sephora.com. And that was my first job in beauty, probably, which is why I would often lean on you and Sally to ask questions about beauty and such. And I had more technical background. So that's why I was hired. And marketing technical. And so then I went from Sephora, I went to Smashbox. Smashbox, I worked in the domestic business on the West Coast, then I did international. So then I got somewhat discovered by the headquarters of Sephora. So then they recruited me away and I moved to Paris and I helped build what they now call, or they did at the time call, exclusive brands. Essentially was brands coming from other parts of the world. Sephora Europe at the time had the big brands, you know, the Lauders, and the L'Oreals and the big ones. And then they had a little private label business and they'd just gotten rid of all their mass market. So they were just looking at ways to be more competitive. Because if you guys have been to Europe, you know that every corner has a pharmacy with tons of product in there. So it's not about location so much anymore in Europe. It's more about what do you offer? So the idea was to have these brands like Smashbox and Urban Decay and Bare Minerals and Strivectin and Peter Thomas Roth and et cetera, that they hadn't heard of, the press would go crazy for it and bring the footfall into the stores, because otherwise everyone had Dior, everyone had Chanel, everyone had the same stuff every place you go. So now Sephora Europe had a point of differentiation with these exclusive brands. And my job was to go around the world and bring them in and then help them with everything, marketing, fixtures, staffing, everything, just a buyer plus kind of thing. So I did that for a number of years. And then I wanted to come home, worked for Too Faced, which was really fun and crazy. And then I got pulled back to Sephora, this time in Singapore, to be their SVP of merchandising and marketing, which is, you know, more of the same that I was doing in Paris, just growing out that region a little bit, which, you know, we were in Malaysia, but we opened India, we were looking into Australia, but which we eventually opened, and Thailand, everywhere in between. And then I came back home and I went back to Too Faced and was part of the team that helped, you know, get everything ready and just help support during a time when they were ready to sell and Lauder became the purchaser. So that was a fun experience. And then after the first year of integration with Lauder, then I left and I went back to Paris. And this time I was working for Gucci Beauty as the GM for Coty. Coty has the license. And that was like a kind of a dumpster fire, I would say. Coty was going through a lot with their board. Their board is a bunch of coffee guys. And so they were cycling through a lot of leadership. So that was interesting. I'd never been at a company before that was struggling so much, even with this great, you know, all the great brands that they had. Gucci was amazing and wonderful and like it was insane. And then the pandemic happened and I came home and I needed a pause. I was burnt out and I had been going down the path of big job, big dollar, big job, big dollar. And I guess just being very ambitious, but there was price. I paid a price for sure. And yeah, you just can't keep going like that and not have some existential like WTF. And I had that for sure. I just did. I was depleted. So the pandemic was a good time to stop everything because I had no FOMO. I didn't have a feeling of, I think it would have been hard for me to do if it weren't the pandemic. I think I would have freaked out, but no one else was, everyone was home, like stuck. So it didn't right. feel strange for me to be home and stuck. And I just let myself kind of go, if you will. And essentially I must have been having what other people would call like a midlife crisis, but I just turned it into an upgrade and I just rebuilt and I reoriented myself to what success looked like to me and what mattered to me. And that took a while. And that's where Maxine's Revenge was born, is out of that like disentanglement of what success looks like at those, you know, at that corporate landscape. And just what did it look like for me as a person is, you know, it's very different. I don't really think I'm a great executive. I don't really like the politics in that sense. I mean, I'm good in that I know the market, I understand what needs to be done, I have a sense of innovation, but I didn't like how it felt. It was very stressful to say, yeah, you know, the board, as you guys know, is like, you know, grow 20% year over year, month over month, essentially, no matter what, You can't say right. No. You can fight, but can't say no. Then you go to your team and you give them, you know, less, half the budget, half the staff, and they're supposed to do, you know, twice the work. And so, you know, you're lying to both parties and you're the one that's going to get pinched in the middle. And I don't like that feeling. And, you know, it's a talent that people have, but it's not me. I'd much rather just say what I'm going to do and do what I'm going to say. But that dance it's no joke.
Yeah. Well, you're now dancing for yourself, you know, and I think that's one of the great things about maturing and getting older is we learn who we are through so many different cycles and so many different chapters. And I think, you know, you having worked for so many of these brands that Hiller and I both have either worked for or with or know of, I mean, that's an exceptional background to be able to also mm-hmm. see what's missing out there, you know, and I can see why you sort of envisioned Maxime's Revenge and really sort of knowing that there's women out there that are in need of thinking about the French face and thinking about concealer and thinking about products differently and how to address as our skin changes and how we mature. Are those products out there keeping up with us? And in many cases, to your point, they're not. And I think that background you gave us, you know, the listeners, especially on labs and testing on young skin and all of it really is starting to make so much more sense, I hope, to our listeners as to why you launched with a concealer and how it is very different. It's almost like you need to come up with a different name than concealer. It's like it's more than a concealer, you know?
It's true. I call it a concealer concentrate and I explain it as it's almost like a concentrated foundation. You just use it. You know, where but I think it's also product is queen, as we have established. I think even more importantly, however, is representation and being able to see and update what 40 plus actually looks like versus the token, gentle, kind old lady with her twin set and Ensure in the background behind the badass in the front of the beauty campaign. That's just not who we are anymore. Like all three of us have long hair. That's not something that we saw when we were kids. I went to the gym this morning and did my squats and heavy weights. I'm sure you guys did too. We didn't see our moms doing that at 55. So there is a whole different view of what it is to be in your 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I want to show that. I want to show it without, I'm not talking about menopause. I don't have any interest in discussing, you know, dry vagina or anything like that. Not that there's no, you know, I'm sure that's interesting to some. It's just not. It's not to me. It's not part of my identity to talk about the physical, like hormonal changes that I'm going through. In the same way that young girls who, you know, they're premenstrual and then they're postmenstrual, but brands don't talk about their menstrual status. And that I think is one of the things I notice with some older brands. It's like, why are we so fixated on this menopause? It's such a boring subject. You just do it and you move on. And like, yes, I understand from a beauty point of view, talking about, okay, my hair is straw. Let's deal with it. Like, what do I need? But I just feel like I don't want to identify with an aging marker. I think that's not representative of who we are. I think we're still just kind of quote unquote girls who still like, you know, looking our best. And we're just a lot more jaded really in terms of what works and what doesn't.
Do you think and I'm listening to you and I'm nodding in agreement. I never thought of it that way before. You know, and let's face it, everything as a woman is used against us in marketing. That's just a given, you know. But do you think that living in France, you were in Singapore, you know, you've lived abroad. I know Hillary has. I've lived in every city in America, no joke. And I really think that this exposes us to being around different cultures, but also different types of women and what it means to be a woman. Do you think that some of that, your experience with living abroad, especially, helped you envision where you wanted to go with Maxime's Revenge?
I think I spent the majority of my time in France because I didn't spend as long in Singapore, but also I just even going back to my Smashbox days, that's when I started traveling there. So it's been 20 plus years that I've been going back and forth, because France is a hub. For those of you who don't know, the beauty hubs of the world are Paris, New York, Tokyo, more or less. I mean, of course, there's some other like hubs, but for the most part, that's kind of historically. I definitely was influenced by the culture in the sense that aging is not such a fearful part of life, especially for the Parisian woman. So she is still extremely sexy and seen as such in her 50s and beyond. It's just the desirability of the woman there is much less about looking young and much more about her power and her just, I want to say her sex appeal, but that doesn't really explain it. I think it's more her self.
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, her je ne sais quoi. Exactly. Yeah. That's why you can't, that's why they say that, which means I don't know what it is.
Right.
But
well, it's her confidence and confidence. She's in her skin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's in her skin. That's exactly right. She doesn't feel self-conscious about herself. She's still wearing heels. She's still walking into the room with her head held high. She just, I think there's just a reverence for a woman who's got her power. And keep in mind that in Paris and all of France, but I speak specifically about Paris because I lived there, childcare is not hard. There are creche, which are, nurseries everywhere, and it's affordable. So what does that mean? Women don't have to give up their career, and they don't. Not only do they not have to, but they don't, and they don't want to, because I think here in America, there is somewhat of a divide about being a stay-at-home mom or being a working mom. And a working mom is not, it's kind of like not a good mom. And then the stay-at-home mom is like, that's the Uber mom. I'm oversimplifying it, and I'm not a mom. So I'm really stretching here out of my wheelhouse. But that divide doesn't exist there. And anyway, there's far fewer stay-at-home moms. It's just not so much a thing. And it's because they can have good health, care for their children, and they do have lots of time off and such. So what does that mean? That means that women there ease into their 40s, 50s, and 60s without as much of an identity crisis. Whereas I think a lot of moms here that are forced to pick a lane when the kids no longer need them as much and or they're out of the house, I do think it becomes an oh shit moment. And that would make anybody feel a sense of who am I? And there could be some insecurity there. And that could translate into just how they envision, like, are they beautiful anymore? And should I double down on all the things that I need to do to be beautiful again? It's not, they don't lean on beauty as much in Paris in terms of skin depth, skin deep beauty. Right. They lean on the beauty of a life that's beautiful, having friends, having vacation, enjoying a beautiful flower. Like it's they don't feel as much of a desperation as they're getting older that I think we do here. And I only give one example of that in terms of just the way women don't have to give up as much of their independent identity there. There's many other factors going on. I'm stumbling through it. And I don't mean to offend, because I'm just doing my best at taking a stab at why the French women just don't have the same demand or need. Like you better be beautiful if you don't have your power. They don't have that crossroads because they kind of never gave up their power.
Right. Right. That's such an interesting way to look at it.
It is. Susan and I talk about this a lot. Susan spent a lot of time in Europe. I spent a lot of time in Europe. And that's one of the things that is so refreshing about Europe is you see women with lines and with wrinkles and they're celebrated and it makes them so captivating. It's like, I remember being at dinners with all of these different women and some in Switzerland, some in London, some in Paris, and just seeing the way that their faces moved in their individual lines. And it gives them a texture to life that is, it's more interesting and they're just really comfortable with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's something very sexy about that.
There is something very, very sexy about it. And also, it's not just in their face. They'll wear the plunging necklines. They'll wear the tight leather pants. Like, they don't feel neutered at a certain point. And I'm sure there's lots of reasons why. I just a sociologist would do a much better job. But I do think it's because they're not forced as much as we are here, perhaps because they're, you know, it's a socialistic culture over there, society. So there's not as many financial risks either. So there's just, it's hard to, it's, I think you just kind of go with the masses there, and the masses generally have a, you know, balanced work-life balance. That's just the way the whole thing is built. Whereas ours is like high highs and low lows, high highs and low lows. And it can be very scary. And women historically lean on their beauty in times of financial distress. And because we have these high highs and low lows in our economy, you know, women are going to do what they have to do to make sure they can be financially secure. And that's our currency in many ways here in America. And the women there, you know, ironically, are a lot more independent because the economy is a bit more stable, maybe.
Right. And they don't economize on looks. There isn't as much value placed on looks. So it's very interesting where that whole dive can do. And I'd be really interested to see, because I do notice that men respond to women differently in Europe. Whereas here, after a certain age, men don't see or look at women as much. Again, this is a gross generalization, but in Europe, they do. So I feel like that's a lot of our entertainment. It's a lot of our films. It's a lot of porn. It's a lot of all of that.
Yeah, you're right. That's a very good point. It's in our popular culture. I think we don't have a sexy interpretation of women at a certain age. And in Europe, they do. And like, it's, you know, young men like older women there. There's, you know, leaders of the country that are, their wives are older and
right.
You know, in France. And there was a famous newscaster, and she had a young boyfriend. So they're famous people, if you will. They have an example of, like, there's not a barrier. Whereas here we tend to celebrate maybe the trophy wife. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Depends on where you are in the country.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think there's a big difference too. I know I've lived on the West Coast for many, many years. But I'm on the East Coast, and, you know, and I'm also a born and bred, raised East Coaster. So I think there are differences between the coasts. And, you know, we definitely have all experienced it on this call. We've all seen it. I'm sure our listeners too. So, you know, I think it's so interesting. You know, people and women especially, or people in general, sometimes think of beauty as something so surface. And I think, as we just discussed, and I think your brand is sort of alluding to this, beauty is not just surface. Beauty is empowering. It's being who you want to be at whatever age that is, but being comfortable in your own skin, that you don't need to necessarily cover it all, but enhance it, right? And I think that sort of maybe we just answered the question over this whole podcast as to why you started with a concealer. Because you know, you want to celebrate you being who you are in your own skin.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm actually pretty broad in terms of my interests. So I like a full beat, you know, drag makeup. And then I like the no makeup makeup. So I don't really care what your style is. I like it all. So I don't have a prescription for what is better. I genuinely love it all. I can get stuck watching somebody doing, is it kabuki makeup? You know, I'll just like, I love all kinds of face painting, I suppose, body painting even, but that's not.
As do we. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just fun. So I don't have a prescription. I just know that for me, until there are other people representing the brand, yes, my look is more undone, I would say. It's just a, you know, I do like a clean, even complexion. So that tends to be what I like. And it's a little undone. Like, I don't always do the mascara. I don't always have blush and lips. Like, sometimes I just like that look. And that is probably influenced by my time in Paris, which is clean, even complexion and, you know, a lip. That's what they do. And I think there was something so easy about that. And I thought it was sort of chic and understated. So for me personally, I like that. I think that fits with my personal style, but I want to reinforce that, like, you know, I have a lot of followers who do full beat and I love watching them and I think they look fantastic. It's just not my personal go-to. Yeah.
But your product, you know, your concealer can do both. It can do it all and everything in between. And I think that's what's so great. You've given a concealer with choices. So you can do the undone or the clean or the light makeup, or you can go full bore, you know, with the contour. Yeah. I love some of the tips on your website where you talk about the bronze tour and Brontour. You know, I love that. I think there's so many women. I mean, Hillary and I know as makeup artists, especially, you know, you can use two or three or even four concealers on the face. But to the average woman out there, she thinks concealer, one, under the eye. And no, you've really opened up this whole conversation, almost the secrets that we've all had as artists.
Well, you guys have owned this. Yeah, you guys, that is very interesting what you're saying. And it's true. Because I've been around people like you, I learned from you. That's who I learned my beauty from. So I saw in photo shoots and other venues that you guys didn't use one foundation, one concealer, one powder. I saw, oh my God, they're really, it's like being a chef and you know, it's just more nuanced and there's layers. And I learned also something that's right in front of all of us every day, but the beauty industry hasn't done a great job of this. I learned that we actually have different colors of skin on our own face. But I think the beauty industry has given us the impression that there's one perfect foundation for you, one perfect. So we're going to give you 50 choices, figure out your undertone, your depth, what your finish is. That's just a lot. That's a lot.
Too much.
It's just too much. You know, the truth is if we all could have, you know, just the affordability of a few different shades to, then that's all we need. We don't need just one perfect holy grail shade. And then if I don't find it, it's wrong. It's just not true. And if you're around makeup artists, you see that.
I agree.
And it's just so fun. It's so user-friendly and it's so flexible. And for all of our listeners, if you feel like you haven't gotten enough of Lia, I want to tell you guys that she does something really cool every morning. I think almost every morning, Lia is on TikTok and she hangs out and gets ready. And she has this incredible group of women that they all just kind of have their coffee, do whatever they're doing during their day and chit chat about every single thing from life. And one of the things that really inspired me is when I was first catching back up with Lia, she was talking about not having a midlife crisis, having a midlife upgrade and how consciously turning that around, especially post-pandemic and just with whatever we have going on in our lives, it's taking anything and making it so positive and so supportive. So you can find her on TikTok. She's there in the mornings. And I don't want to commit you to any certain schedule, but I know that if I can usually find you.
Yeah, no, thank you. I do. I go Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I was going every day for a while. But I go Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm starting a little bit later now, just prior to getting restocked. I'm giving myself more time for product development such in the morning, but either 8 in the morning or 10 at the latest. And we just hang out and it's a really nice group. And we're building a Facebook community as well. Cause there's a group of us that met and then became friends. And then we jumped on Marco Polo and then we jumped on a, you know, text message chain. And that's just not possible to do with over 100 people. So Facebook has private groups and there's some people that don't want to be on TikTok. So, you know, Facebook groups make that a little bit easier. So it's just a really supportive group of people. You guys have to tell me a little bit more about your audience, by the way, too. I would love to know more about your people. Are they like beauty junkies or what's your audience?
You know, Susan can weigh in on this too. You know, we read absolutely everything that people send us. And people send us a lot of comments because our podcast is broadcast over different platforms. So we get different sort of audiences in different places. But the thing that surprised me the most, so we definitely have our industry people, our beauty junkies, because we have experts on in product development and in those areas. But I've been really surprised how many people come back to us and ask us more questions about what we were talking about. And it's a lot of people that have felt left behind or forgotten by beauty. And they're like, I'm overwhelmed. I feel like everyone's saying they're talking to me and they're saying they're being real to me, but I still don't know what exactly I'm doing or what exactly any of this means. And you guys break it down. Like, I feel like I get it. And so we're getting super experts and industry people, and then we're getting other people that have been kind of intimidated.
Okay, that is nice. I love those.
Susan, do you agree?
Yeah,
I do. I think, you know, our whole purpose, Leah, in doing a podcast and building a community was coming at it twofold. First of all, as women who wear makeup and live our lives and have busy lives, and we love beauty and everything that is beauty, from self-care to hair care, inside out, upside down, we love it all. Then we also happen to be industry professionals. So, you know, we're coming at it not just as women who love beauty, but women who lived beauty. So we're sort of that combination, and we love to give tips and techniques and advice and whatnot, but we're trying to sort of together, I think, with our listeners, like, we're with you, we're not here, and you guys are here, and we're lecturing and teaching, which we spent our whole careers doing in education. But we're saying, no, we're in this together. We're older. We're, wow, I like this. Why do you like this? So we've sort of become kind of partners and friends and trying to build a community that way of like-minded women that want to learn from us. But at the same time, we want to go through it with them too, because we don't necessarily, you know, have to teach anymore. We get this luxury of being able to share, but at the same time learn, which is my favorite thing in life to do. It's that back and forth, you know? And
that's a really nice place to be. And anyway, we're all learning because our skin is changing so much. So we're all figuring that out. And it's like we have a new face. I mean, don't you guys feel like, where did our cheeks go? Remember we had like full cheeks? Cheekbone to chin, and you're like, wow, that's a whole new face to get used to.
It's a whole new face. Well, and there's a lot of humor in this. And this whole thing actually started because Susan and I, you know, being on different coasts now, over the years we would have catch-up sessions. And it just so happened that years and years ago, I was sitting in the Beverly Hills Hotel waiting to go upstairs to do hair and makeup for a client. And Susan and I were catching up, and anybody that's familiar with the Beverly Hills Hotel, you know, their lobby's huge. So it's not like you can just sit and overhear someone's conversation. And Susan and I were on the phone, and I was like, yes, of course, this client takes forever. She's always 45 minutes late, but I always have to be here. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, because then she'd be on time if I showed up on her time, you know? So we were just chit-chatting, and there was this woman that heard us talking, and she kind of like, you know, went from one settee to another vignette, sort of inched her way closer to us. And at one point she just looked at me. She's like, how do I get on these girlfriend calls? And Susan and I have always been saying, we need to be talking to people. We actually pitched a show in the early aughts. We have such a background. And so again, we were catching up, and we were just laughing, and we were like, you know, and then her daughter said it. She's like, Mom, people like need to hear what you guys talk about, because it's amazing and it's funny and it's real. So we just decided to do it.
Yeah.
And it was that simple.
I basically on a call to Hillary, what was it, almost a year ago now, Hill? Yeah. I said, we should just do a freaking podcast. And saying that was sort of like, we didn't know how to do one.
Yeah,
we
didn't know how to do a podcast. How did you figure out all the technical stuff?
Oh, well. Have we?
We're getting there. I just, you know, we started by talking to, I had a girlfriend that I met actually at a charity event. I sat at this dinner table, and with this group of women that were of all the people in the event, they were the only group of women that like support and network with each other within their one group. And there was this woman named Mickey St. Germain, and she had had a podcast, and she was so open and so gracious. And she said, "Hillary, if you ever want to do anything, if I can help you in any way, just let me know." So I took her up on it. I called her and I said, "How do you do this podcast thing?" She gave me some great tips. She said, "If you guys need to FaceTime, I'll help you." And then I just kind of poked around, and we're still figuring it all out. We're still figuring it out.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm like Googling like how to podcast. Like I am such a Luddite, and I'm the first one to say it. And we laughed about it because I just, you know, I come from a background in, you know, media communications and theater.
Oh, so
I knew how to speak. I actually had a radio show at 13. So Teen Talk. So I actually knew
how to speak incredibly well. You're both fantastic presenters.
And you know what? All of my teachers in Emerson College would really say, "Yes, thank you. That's so nice." And and you're making my parents very proud. But I knew that I could do this. I knew I could do in front of the camera. And I know Hillary's camera trained as well. I knew we could do the verbal piece. But it was the technology, the techie part. I was like, "Oh, I can write scripts. I can talk. I can produce. I can do all that." But I don't know how to like make it. So thank goodness, and I have to give props to Hillary is married to a wonderfully talented individual who is a gentleman who really knows his way around technology and music. And so I have to say, Hillary's husband was a huge help and a huge support for us, and still is as well, because he knows so much of these things. And but yeah, we're doing it together, and I think we're just sort of piece by piece, figuring it out as we're making it up as we go.
We're making it up as we go. Yeah. Yeah. He taught me how to edit. He was like, He said, "You can't edit on one of these stupid little like things.
Platform that you edit on."
I edit in Logic. He's a musician and a producer. So he uses Logic and like all these other platforms. So he set me up with Logic, which when you look at it, it looks like I'm like landing an airplane. And at first I was like, "Okay." And he's like, "I'm going to help you three times. And then you have to figure it out."
Oh my God. And thank God she's really good at it, because, you know, I can come up with the scripts and I can come up with the production and the whole concept. You know, we do this and a lot of it we do together, but the techie part, that's all Hill. And I mean, thank God we have so much love on our side, and that's really helped us. But we do laugh sometimes because oh my God, really? Can we do this? And we're doing it coast to coast. So, I mean,
the answer is yes.
I'm really proud.
I never had any doubt. When we decided we were going to do it, we're like, it's going to happen. And people might see us like learning as we go, but they are.
Totally. They are. And they don't care. And you know, what's so interesting about what you guys are doing and what I'm doing and other people as well is, I mean, we relaunched our careers in a way that, did we ever have to do this much of our own production before? No.
No.
You know, we didn't. And so now I love the fact that it's a great time to be an entrepreneur because there's so many applications out there that you can use. You just have to have the aptitude, which it sounds like you do, Hillary, to learn. And you just need to have that ability to figure it out. And so much of it is poorly defined anyway. So it's not even you who's making the mistake half the time.
So we know if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. And even if you go into it planning that we don't know exactly what we're doing, but we're going to figure it out. And we set very generous timeframes for ourselves. We said, we're not going to, you know, put pressure on ourselves to monetize season one. Like my husband's a musician. He's also an actuary. So like Susan's husband, he's kind of like, so what are you guys doing here? But we have been like, you know what? We're going to give ourselves a season or two, find our cadence, have the juice, have the guests, and really listen to our audience and then, you know, see where it takes us. But we're doing it from a place of joy. Like we look forward to chatting with each other. I can't wait to see her little face on the screen, you know?
Oh, wow. That's fun. Yeah. And then people like feel that. So Yeah. That, like they feel like they're listening to a couple of besties and they like that.
Oh, that's so funny that you say that, Leah, because I went to my chiropractor yesterday and she's an amazing woman. In fact, I really want to have her on our podcast because she's into wellness and health. And we were talking and she said, God, Susan, I'm loving your podcast. And she doesn't wear any makeup, you know, and she's just a really holistic person. And she said, I'm learning so much, but you know what I like the best about your podcast? And I didn't even tell Hillary this yet. She said, it's like, I feel like I'm eavesdropping on two friends, just having the best conversation and laughing and enjoying life. And I said, you get life. That's why we named it Life Gloss. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's Life Gloss. It's like just living life, having a good time. It's not always shiny and perfect.
No.
But you sure feel pretty some days when you're doing it. Right. So that's kind of, she got it and I didn't have to tell her. And I was like, oh my God. Like she got
it. Oh, I love it.
Plus, yeah. Just to be able to be, like I like to have podcasts on when I'm working because otherwise I'm alone all the time.
Yes.
And I like to have conversation going. Yes. So I should put you guys on. Where do we like Spotify, that kind of thing? Or how do mm-hmm. we?
Spotify.
Okay. Yep. Okay, good. I listen to Spotify. Yeah. So then it's like, it's just that little bit of chatter that I need to feel like I'm not alone all the time. I know that we really can't multitask. I know that's a farce that we really do need to focus, but I just need the noise. So I don't know, maybe I have ADHD. I'm not sure, but I like the noise, the chatter.
You'll probably giggle sometimes too, because you'll hear us say things and you'll be like, oh, I know what you're talking about. Because we'll talk about like, you know, just ridiculous things that have happened.
Yeah.
You know, like when we were doing awards, we've done awards seasons together, working with different companies. And I'll be like, do you remember that time every day of award season, my mullet got worse because I was bouncing between two celebrity hairdressers that didn't love each other. And one was like, oh, he cut your hair. Oh, let me fix it. Oh, let me fix it. So there's just funny stories and
Hillary and I always tried it. That's the one thing we try, you know, to dish in a very positive way and not take any prisoners and not, you know, we're old school and I'm really old school in the fact that I was raised to, as a makeup artist, you don't talk about your clients. You don't say who you did.
No.
You don't give away their secrets. And now we have a whole generation of that's all they do, you know? So there's some things we'll talk about, some things that'll go to the grave with us. You know, some people will, you know, so I think there's a lot of women that listen to us that maybe appreciate that we still have that, you know, I mean, I'm a Pisces. I'm loyal to the end. You know, I'm like a mm-hmm. vault. You tell me a secret, it stays, you know? And I think there's a whole generation of women that we're kind of like that. We're not necessarily, I don't have to like, you know, tell you every time I went to the bathroom and post it on Instagram live, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very different. That I think is the big thing in our podcast that you see the differences. But we don't get mean and we're not here to take anybody down.
Funny. It's like, I was just, you know, running around doing stuff for Grammy weekend and it was so funny. The younger people were asking me, oh, what did you do? Oh, who did you do? Celebrities or not celebrities? Or who were you doing? And I was like,
I know.
Oh. And I just said like a little bit of both. And then and more than once, people just stood and looked at me and blinked. And I could see in their eyes, they were like, is she full of it? Maybe she just really didn't do anything. And I was like, they have no concept of like,
right.
I'm not going to tell you where I've been and what I've been doing.
I didn't even know that was a generational thing, but obviously I you know, my career grew around you women. So I don't even ask because I know, I mean, I'm trained by you guys that like, they just you don't put them in that situation. And that's
right.
So, yeah. I don't even ask because you guys, I don't know the new generation of artists, but I know your generation and you know, I never got the dish. And I was at Smashbox with all the studios and everything. And I didn't get the dish.
With Dean and Davis.
Yeah.
Old and school. Lori.
And Dean Lori and Davis.
Taylor. I love Lori. Lori's so good.
She's the best.
Remember how everybody had a crush on Davis?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Everyone, every makeup artist, every girl has such a crush on him. Now there's some dish for you.
Yeah.
Every girl, he would come in, he would do appearances when we were launching Smashbox in the stores. And oh my God, it was like, Davis.
Davis.
Yeah. He's like such a rock star. Like everyone had such a crush on him.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's not an ugly guy. Definitely has some swag.
Yeah. So Leah, before you,
where can people find Maxine's Revenge, Leah? We can't let you go without sharing it with the people. The URL is maxinesrevenge.com and all socials are at Maxine's Revenge, MaxinesRevenge. And we're going to have you back. I want to hear everything about the name. I can't believe we didn't get to that. I know it has everything to do with your mom, but that's for next time. Stay tuned.
Meanwhile, find Life Gloss on Instagram and TikTok at lifeglosspodcast.com and on our website, lifegloss.com. You just might catch us live on TikTok. You never know. All right, everybody. Susan, stay glossy.
Hillary, stay glossy.